We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Well, we go from the classical music of Frédéric Chopin, his great piano music on All Things Considered, to jazz by John Ellis. Our program today, however, is not on music, but it's about books. And we're talking by phone with Mark Johnson, who is the executive director for the Fellowship of Reconciliation in the USA. We're talking to Mark at his home in New York. Mark, can you hear me all right?
I hear you fine, Steve. Thank you.
And we can hear you. It's a good connection in spite of the weather. What's the weather been like there in your part of upstate New York?
Well, after one of the worst storms in recent history, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's lovely and sunny and comfortable today, but big piles of snow everywhere.
And you have electricity.
Yes, and my offices in Nyack do as well, finally, after 2 days without.
Ah, well, we're glad you could be on the telephone. We're talking about books. Let's start off just immediately. We'll be asking later for listeners to make some recommendations on good books, books worth reading is our title for today. But what's the best book you've read this last year, whether it's new or old?
Well, I'm going to cheat and give you one each in three categories, one fiction, one nonfiction, one poetry.
Perfect.
The nonfiction book that I keep drifting back to is by James Howard Kunstler, and it's called World Made by Hand. Many people, if they know Kunstler, will probably know him as an environmental and sort of urban and anthropological geographer, but this is a post-apocalyptic novel set in upstate New York.
Now, wait, you first said nonfiction, but this is a novel.
No, it is a novel.
Okay.
The nonfiction piece is by Rita Nakashimi Brock and Rebecca Ann Parker, and together they've written Saving Paradise, How Christianity Traded Love of This World for Crucifixion and Empire. And the book of poetry is one I'm sure we probably both know. It's the latest of Wendell Berry's series called Leavings, his most recent book of poems.
Well, let's start with the last first. People don't read much poetry these days. Why should they bother to find Wendell Berry's poetry?
Well, Wendell Berry is sort of, to my mind, sort of a dean of the soul of America, particularly when it comes to the love of land and place. We might know Berry first as an essayist, and you're there at the University of Illinois. I first met Wendell Berry maybe, 25, 30 years ago when we invited him to speak as one of the lecturers in a series on big business and big agriculture, and he had just written a book of poems, so we said, well, we'll set up a side event in a small hall because there won't be as many people who would come to hear him read poetry, and there were nearly 400 people who showed up. So the students at the University of Illinois have an appreciation for Wendell. I've followed him and had a chance to meet him on a number of occasions since those days, and to my mind, one of his most powerful roles is as that prophetic voice in terms of understanding both what we're doing to the earth and the environment and the fact that we so often do it in a certain kind of political ignorance. Would you like one stanza?
Please do. And give the title of the book again, if you would.
The book is Leavings, Poems by Wendell Berry. And this is, he's written periodically something that he has called Sabbath poems. He has a way of walking in the woods on Sunday morning and occasionally reducing those walks to poems. So this is from his Sabbaths 2005-2008. And the stanza reads, "The nation is a boat, as some have said, ourselves its passengers. How troubling now to ride it drifting down the flow from the old high vision of dignity, freedom, holy writ of habeas corpus, and the land's abundance down to waste, want, fear, tyranny, torture, caricature of vision in a characterless time while the abyss whirls below." He's getting a little more pessimistic as he ages into that role, but I do find his prophetic voice and his understanding of the natural world powerful.
And still can be quite lyric and can entice you into reading his insights and about the environment. His poetry can be found in various periodicals, including the New Yorker magazine. Wendell Berry is a wonderful poet, and that was a selection from his most recent book, Leavings. Thank you, Mark Johnson, for reading that to us. And now let's move back to The World Made by Hand. Tell us about that book.
Well, we've been seeing a series of post-apocalyptic novels, Cormac McCarthy's Road and Jim Croce's Pest House. The most recent ones are, to my mind, are Margaret Atwood's The Year of the Flood and this one by James Howard Kunstler. As I said, it's set in the upper Hudson Valley between Glens Falls and Albany. And it is a time where people still have all of the artifacts of the current contemporary world sort of at hand, but they're having to adopt them to a life with no electricity, no gasoline. They've reverted to horseback and boats and canals. And this particular community is a remnant of a rural upstate community that is learning to continue to offer dentistry and medicine and dry goods and other services to itself without much access to the outside world. And the story revolves around two impinging forces. One is an Amish-like or a sort of a reformed agrarian religious group that's migrating up out of Pennsylvania and Virginia after suffering some abuse there and has chosen this area of New York to settle in. And the other is sort of a Hell's Angels motorcycle gang type of folks who are serving the purposes of recycling in a camp outside of town. And so the story weaves together these three different communities and how they move to some level of accommodation under trying circumstances.
Now, but when you talk about upstate, of course, you're referring to New York. Here in Illinois, where this program originates, we'd have things turned upside down, and the Amish here are in downstate Illinois. And if there were to be an apocalypse of whatever sort, nuclear or otherwise, and suddenly the whole area was without electricity, people would be wishing they'd made better friends with the Amish in this state, in this state as well as yours.
Well, I'm reminded you asked about the weather a few years ago. We had a tremendous ice storm up in the Adirondack Mountains, and it knocked out power for an extended period of time. And there's a significant dairy industry, and the farmers didn't have in their hands any longer the capacity to milk cows without machines. And so they imported a large number of Amish farmers from Pennsylvania who served as milk assistants for a week without power. It was fascinating.
With hundreds of heads of cattle, that takes a lot of hands.
Well, both in terms of Kunstler and Atwood's The Year of the Flood, there is this weaving together of a sort of a secular humanist community, a religious community, and sort of an agrarian agricultural community somehow it represents these three traditions that are each challenged in different ways, and each actually brings some survival set of skills to the table at the same time. They also find themselves in the form of science fiction, often wrestling with violence and what it might look like. And that's, again, must be harder to write science fiction today because the reality is so close at hand.
Before we get to the third of the books that you mentioned in response to my question about what's the best thing you've read, new or old, in this past year, before we get to the nonfiction one, let me just remind listeners, this is Keeping the Faith. This is a live call-in show every week here on WILL AM 580. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host, although Don Nolan fills in very regularly and very helpfully. He's a retired professor of religion and philosophy at Parkland College here in Champaign. We're talking with Mark Johnson, who is the executive director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation for the USA, headquartered in Nyack, New York. Mark travels extensively and reads a lot as he travels, and as a lifetime reader, we've frequently had him as a guest on this show. I think this may be the fourth or fifth time in the 11 years of this program, talking about books that he has appreciated and books that are worth reading. If you have a question or a comment about any of the books Mark has talked about or others that you would like to recommend for our listeners, we know people who hear this show are great readers, do call us. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. If it's a long-distance call, there's a toll-free number you may use, 1-800-222-9455. And that includes people who are listening online at will.illinois.edu. We do have listeners literally around the world to this station online through their computers. Unfortunately, they cannot call us toll-free. It's only if it's in the continental U.S., but we are eager to have people join in the conversation. Well, Mark, let's get back to the third book you mentioned in nonfiction. Tell us about that. Saving Paradise.
Saving Paradise, How Christianity Traded Love of This World for Crucifixion and Empire. The co-authors, Rita Nakashimi Brock, is a UCC pastor, and she's also the head of Faith Voices for the Common Good, actually a minister in the Christian Church, the Disciples of Christ. And Rebecca Ann Parker is an art historian. And they live and travel in similar circles or together. And at some point, they suddenly heard the rumor that there were no artistic representations of the crucified Christ until about 1,000 years into the Christian Church. And that took them by surprise, and they began an investigation, traveling throughout the Middle East and Europe, Turkey and Rome, around the boundaries of the early Christian Church, and they found, in fact, that the most common representation of Christ and the Church in the early years was that of paradise. It was the garden. It was the Garden of Eden and the rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates, and that it represented, until the rise of the Roman Empire and the Crusades, the predominant vision of the world. And so they argue in the book that, in fact, the early vision of the Church was heaven on earth. It was recovering paradise. It was restoring love. And it wasn't until the Church became a source of support for warring empires that we begin to see the crucifixion as the ideological symbol of the Christian Church. So it's a long and fascinating and beautifully written dissertation on that theme.
And who publishes that, if you happen to have that information?
Yeah, it's a Beacon Press.
Beacon Press.
Uh-huh. And I will admit it was published in, I'm sure it was 2008. And it happens, Steve, that I did review the book in Fellowship of Reconciliation's magazine, Fellowship. America's oldest peace journal, and always carries a good section of reviews at the end of it.
And if people were to want to subscribe to Fellowship, how might they do that?
The best path to a subscription to Fellowship is to go to our website, www.forusa.org, and you can see both regular articles that are posted shortly after publication online, and can subscribe or join FOR at that site.
So to learn more about the Fellowship of Reconciliation or to subscribe to Fellowship Magazine, go to forusa.org.
That's correct.
All right. Why books, Mark? Here we are in the electronic age. Why not videos? Why not YouTube? Why not movies? Why books?
Yeah, I suspect that for me, one of the reasons is I grew up in a house where my mother and father loved books, and so they were always modeling, and I think my brothers and I simply fell into the habit as a part of the family, and our daughters follow that path as well. So we're a family of readers. The other is that I have found I have a reputation, I guess. I generally am reading 30 or 40 books at the same time. A lot of people probably pick up a book and read it to the end and then go to another. But I find it fascinating in which a book will urge me to look somewhere else for a moment and then start a conversation, one book with another. And I have trouble doing that in video or in any other format, I think. Just being able to follow a line of argument, to follow a theme poetically through a series of books is one of the things that I love to do.
So tell us how that actually works in your practice. Here you have, you hear about a book that sounds interesting, you pick it up, you start reading, and then why do you stop, and what do you do when you stop?
Well, where to turn? I recently was in Cairo in the Middle East for 10 days in Israel, Palestine, and Cairo, trying to draw attention to and understand more clearly the situation in Gaza and the siege of Gaza. One of the things that happened in the course of preparation was to be reminded about Joe Sacco's work, and particularly his newest work, Footnotes in Gaza, which is a graphic piece of journalism, like a graphic novel, but it's actually an exploration of two events in Gaza in 1956, in Khan Yunis and Rafah.
Tell us that title again, Mark.
It's Footnotes in Gaza by Joe Sacco, S-A-C-C-O. And it's published by Metropolitan Books and reviewed very widely, New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times. And so it came back to mind that we lost a great poet in the last year, Mahmoud Darwish. And so I stopped reading Footnotes in Gaza and picked up Mahmoud Darwish's If I Were Another, his last book of poems. And in that, Darwish paints poetic pictures of Palestine from the time that he was a young person. And the contrast, you know, is striking in terms of Darwish, some of his hopeful early voices about his life. And then I'm drawn, I said, well, what does that same conversation look like through the poems of another? And it happens that Yehuda Amichai died in 2000, but his last collection of poems, Open, Closed, Open, was just published. And I've been reading Yehuda Amichai for some time as well. And so I picked that up, and so I read the three together, moving back and forth, and find that the images mix across cultures, across languages, across voices. I'm reading them all in English, in translation from Arabic or Hebrew in two cases, but there's obviously a conversation. You know that Darwish was reading Amichai, and Amichai was reading Darwish. You can feel it in their poems. So it's that conversation.
And what does Joe Sacco's footnotes in Gaza contribute to that conversation?
Well, there's also present in both Darwish and Amichai a mourning, a longing, a history of pain from conflict. And Joe Sacco, by investigating UN records, by talking to survivors of the two massacres in Khan Yunis and Rafah, brings to the surface sort of what the references are in the poetry. So you've got a sort of a concrete historical description of a series of events in November of 1956, and then you have the way that that's expressed itself over the lifetime of two poets, one Palestinian and one Israeli.
We're talking with Mark Johnson, who is Executive Director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation for the United States. Mark, you travel a lot in your position, and you mentioned this recent trip to Cairo, Egypt, and Palestine and Israel. What do you try to do when you get in those areas? What are some of the things that the FOR does to try to bring about peace?
Mm-hmm. There are branches of the Fellowship of Reconciliation in 44 countries around the world, and there's a concentration of them in Israel and Palestine. There are three branches, in fact, in the West Bank and one in Israel in Shefa'im. So one of the things I was doing was simply to make sure that I was in conversation with my colleagues who are teaching active nonviolence, living out a life of nonviolence in the midst of conflict, both to understand more fully and immediately how nonviolence expresses itself in the face of the kind of state violence that is present there, and also to explore ways in which together we can be sharing one another's stories and being witness to one another. We went on to Cairo because our goal was to bring 1,400 people from 42 countries into Gaza on the anniversary of the war on Gaza in December of 2008 into January 2009. In the end, we did not get into Gaza, but we were able to have sort of open telephone conversations, and a small delegation did take some medical supplies and other stuff in, but we learned a lot about and we were able to lift up. We were there as what we called an interfaith satyagraha. We were in the spirit of Gandhi, simply trying to be present on our feet and in our hearts and minds to suffering in Israel and in Palestine. I came back and went to Colombia, where FOR USA has a program serving agrarian villages in northern Colombia, communities that have committed themselves by covenant to a nonviolent life of sustainable agriculture. And we have five young adults who live in protective accompaniment in those communities and one professional staff. So we're trying wherever we can to be present to people who are trying to live out lives of nonviolence and increasingly of modeling sustainability, and then trying to write and witness about them as well.
To learn more about the Fellowship of Reconciliation online, you can go to forusa.org. And also learn about Fellowship Magazine, which is a wonderful resource. Mark often writes articles, reviews, book reviews, and things like that there, in addition to talking about what he's learned from his travels as executive director. Mark, you mentioned that the Fellowship of Reconciliation is in 44 different countries. How can people be involved in this country?
Well, in this country, there are, first of all, I guess I should say that FOR in this country is a distributed or federated fellowship of 45 local chapters and 65 affiliates. It's an informal but a long-standing community going back to 1915 of chapters in local circumstances, looking for ways to live out the vision and mission of FOR, a commitment to nonviolent social change. So So again, at that same website, someone could find that there is an active chapter close enough to be a participant in. There's a chapter in Chicago, for example, and there's a good number of FOR members in Champaign-Urbana, your immediate broadcast area, but all across the country and around the world. FOR is, in some ways, it's an identity as much as it is an activity. It is a living witness and presence to nonviolence, and that can express itself in collaboration and cooperation with other groups that are addressing issues of social justice and peace in this country and overseas. So it's an effort to be in touch with like-minded people, to be a part of a peace witness in an active way. And those opportunities are available, as I say, all across the country as well as around the world.
Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who might like to suggest a book that you've read that's worth reading. For others, 333-9455 will put you in touch with several local lines if you're in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois area. If it's a long-distance call, use our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. That will put you on the air with our guest, Mark Johnson. Mark, let's get back to books. Do you tend to read more fiction, nonfiction, or poetry?
I guess I probably read a little more nonfiction. I said I read many books at the same time, but I try not to be reading more than one novel at one time.
Ah.
I will read multiple volumes of poetry sometime at the same time, but within the nonfiction field, I can be reading in philosophy or social science or peace and social justice. So I probably do read more nonfiction than fiction.
Tell us a little bit about fiction before we get to nonfiction. What other novels have you read recently that you'd recommend to others?
I suspect you're familiar with, because you first introduced me to Richard Powers, his latest novel, Generosity and Enhancement.
Yes.
And that was I'm so grateful to have met Powers through you, and Generosity and Enhancement is a fascinating story, not least of which because it speaks to a political situation in the Western Sahara. It's another illustration of, I picked up the novel because of the author, but as the author introduced me to some of the political issues in Algeria, Morocco, Tunisia, and particularly in the Western Sahara, Morocco, I began to look for people to talk to about the situation and explore on the web and read more deeply into the area. But the other thing that's is fascinating about Generosity and Enhancement is that it speaks to this whole area of positive psychology, the impact of a way of looking at the world that is hopeful and positive. And out of that, I also then went and picked up Barbara Ehrenreich's new book, Bright Sided, and also the most recent book by Chris Hedges, The End of the Empire of Illusion. It's fascinating that there is this conversation going on in fiction and nonfiction about the impact or the results of this move in psychology to the realm of positive psychology and some of its potential costs to us culturally. But Generosity is the story of a young woman from the Western Sahara who performs so far above average on measures of well-being and good feeling that she becomes a celebrity and a pursued human anomaly. It's set in Chicago and a fascinating novel.
Novel by Richard Powers, who is on the faculty here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Mark, what do you do when you have a favorite author or one you've loved reading before and they have a new book? Do you just automatically buy it? Do you get it from a library? How do you deal with that ownership of books issue?
I want to check and see if my wife is listening or not. I almost always buy it. In fact, there's one poet, Michael Blumenthal, And I read a book of his years and years ago called Sympathetic Magic. And he seemed to have disappeared off of the face of the earth. But for years, I have always sort of checked the poetry section when I go into a bookstore. And he has a new book out of poetry called And, A-N-D. And I bought it and brought it home, and I've been reading it ever since. Powers is someone, as I become more interested in an author, I'll read backwards and forwards. I just finished a few books by Cornel West, but most particularly Cornell's newest autobiography called Brother West, Living and Loving Out Loud. And in that, West talked about the influence of some of the early Russian literature on his thinking and life. And so I went back to my bookshelf and pulled off Pushkin's Eugene Onegin and Lermontov's A Hero of Our Time, nice sort of compact paper books, and took them to Columbia with me to read on the plane going and coming. So sometimes I have access to a library where I haven't read everything or haven't read some things in a long time that I can just reach out and pull them off the shelf. But other times I will just keep adding to my collection.
We're about halfway through our program on Keeping the Faith this week with our guest, Mark Johnson. We're talking with Mark by phone at his home in upstate New York. Mark is the executive director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation for the United States. I will be getting back to Mark in just a moment. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the frequent host of Keeping the Faith. Next week, our guest will be a professor from Indianapolis, Indiana, who practices seven different religions. And if you ask him, are you Christian? Are you Buddhist? Are you whatever? He's most likely to say yes. We'll be talking about how one does that next Sunday night, March 7th. James S. Wolfe, Professor Wolfe, is the author of the recent book, A Song of Faith. On March 14, our guest will be Reverend Cindy Shepherd, who is recently back from Nicaragua. She'll be talking about how mission can be done through fair trade. That'll be March 14 here on Keeping the Faith. On the 21st of March, we have two or three guests from the new health clinic sponsored by the local Muslim community here in Champaign-Urbana. And we'll be having the medical director, Dr. Shamim Sadia, and with her will be the chair of the board of directors of the health clinic, Professor Irfan Ahmad, a professor of engineering here at the University of Illinois, and perhaps a medical student who's the operation manager for the health clinic, Syed Hashmi. On March 28, our guest will be Chris Valillo, talking about the values in the music of Abraham Lincoln, some of the music from Lincoln's time. Valillo is a performer, a singer, and a storyteller, so it'll be delightful to have him on the program. The University YMCA has been a longtime supporter of this program, and let me mention two things coming up at the Y that are open to the public this week. On March 2nd, Tuesday at noon at the University Y on campus, Interfaith in Action is a student organization on campus, and it's part of a national organization headed up by Dr. Ibu Patel, who is a University of Illinois alum and founder of the Interfaith Youth Corps, and that CORE is spelled C-O-R-E. Interfaith in Action will be talking about their local efforts, and that's a program that's free and open to the public at noon on Tuesday as part of the WISE Know Your University program. So you can often around noon find parking spaces and, of course, public transportation, many buses stop a half block from the Y there at the University Library if you'd like to go to that program Tuesday noon. And Friday at noon is part of the long Friday Forum tradition of bringing in special speakers to the university. The guest will be Professor Salim Rashid. He's a professor of economics, and he'll be talking about doing well and doing good, expatriates and economic development in Bangladesh. And this talk will examine new forms of social entrepreneurship that built on the earlier work of Dr. Yunus, Y-U-N-U-S, who received the Nobel Prize for his work on public-private partnerships. And by good planning, it happens that Dr. Mohammed Yunus will be speaking at the university tomorrow night in the Fallinger Auditorium. Again, this is Monday, March 1st at 7 p.m. And so in the Fallinger Auditorium at the south end of the quadrangle, Dr. Yunus will be speaking. They're expecting a large crowd, so it's first come, first serve. No tickets, but get there early if you'd like to hear him. It should be a fascinating talk. He is talking about social entrepreneurship in the 21st century. If you enjoy Keeping the Faith, you might also like what you would find on our sister television station, WILL-TV, the weekly half-hour program on religion and ethics. News Weekly can be seen at 12:30 on Sundays. Well, let's get back to our guest, Mark Johnson. Mark, you talked about your early reading. Are there any authors you started reading when you were a kid that you still enjoy reading, going back to? Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I am there. Okay. I'm thinking about that. You know, one of the things it brings to mind is now I have grown children and son-in-laws and sons-in-laws-to-be, and the two guys have been introducing me to the graphic novel.
Ah.
And one of them I'm reading right now is Secret Identity by Kirk Busiek, which is built around the story of Superman. I don't remember reading comic books sort of aggressively, but I know I did read them regularly, and it's just fascinating to watch the genre sort of evolve, Neil Kamen's work. And so I'm learning a new face. I think I probably first saw it when I saw some of the anime, the comic books in Japan, traveling in Japan, and how commonly subway riders and train riders there were reading them. But I mentioned Joe Sacco before to see the maturing of that genre into that form. I think when I was getting to the point, too, I was recognizing that I mentioned Darwish and Amakai had both passed away, and I was reading their last works, that there is sort of a meditation on mortality that's a part of their work as they age. And we've seen some famous authors passing away. I'm going to go back and read Catcher in the Rye again.
With Salinger's death recently, yes.
Salinger. I think it has more to going back and rereading things that I read early on as much as following someone that I've been reading for a long time. I see Don DeLillo has a new novel out. I'm looking forward to reading that. His last one was Free Fall, but his White Noise, must be almost 20 years ago, was again one of those sort of science fiction type meditations on what was happening following the nuclear tests in the Nevada deserts.
Mark, we do have a caller wanting to join our conversation. Let's go to a caller from Urbana on line number one. Yes, you're on the air with Mark Johnson.
Thank you. I'm very much interested in the conversation that you're having about various books. I wonder if your guest is familiar with Andrew Marin's book, Love is an Orientation. You covered it on your program a couple of weeks ago, but it is pointing up an area where there's great need for reconciliation between the various parts of our society.
Love is an orientation that deals with particularly evangelical Christianity's attitudes towards gays, lesbians, transgendered folk. Are you familiar with that at all, Mark?
I don't recognize it. I just came from a conversation this afternoon with someone just back from Uganda, and the question was the ways in which some of our U.S.-based evangelical or more fundamental Christian attitudes towards gay and lesbians are being articulated and manifest in legislation in Uganda. It was a difficult conversation this afternoon. I should look at Marin's book. It certainly sounds as though it would be apt to that conversation.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let me give the phone numbers again for others who'd like to ask a question or recommend a book for others to pick up. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere 1-800-222-9455. And of course, if you've missed part of this program or other programs on Keeping the Faith or others here on WILL AM, you can go to the website, will.illinois.edu, click on AM, and then click on Keeping the Faith or Focus 580, now called Focus Afternoon Magazine, to hear previous interviews that have been archived there, and you can listen at your own convenience at your computer. Mark, let's talk a little bit about some categories of reading that you do. When you're reading these several books all at once, do you have certain themes that you sort of look for? I know the environment has been a concern of yours for a long time. Is that one of the themes that you sort of find yourself drawn toward?
Yes, it is. I just picked up Stuart Brand's latest piece of manifesto on the environment, and have been following Al Gore and Bill McKibben in particular. Bill, I've been reading for a long, long time. And the naturalist, as they feed that, Barry Lopez is someone that I've been reading for a long time and watch for anything new coming from him as well. I am increasingly drawn to work that ties our environmental concerns together with issues of sustainability in terms of economics and agriculture. I was with Walden Bello in Cairo. Bello, a Filipino activist and member of parliament who has a new book out on food wars. Again, we can reference our conversation going back to some of the ways in which Wendell Berry introduced us to the concerns about agribusiness and big business and seeing the ways in which that field becomes one of increasing political and social concern and concern around reconciliation. Technology and philosophy, I'm reading Peter Singer's book, Wired for War, the arguments that, in fact, we may have made a transition as a species when we've effectively, through robotics, distanced ourselves from the physical hands-on warring and see ourselves now capable of conducting war at a greater distances. Those kinds of questions, I think it's both a reflection of the work I'm in and part of what has attracted me to this work, that we have to be concerned theologically, ideologically, politically about the ways in which we relate to one another through love and through war. So I get drawn to books that represent those conversations regularly.
Now, Mark, these are all very serious topics. Don't you ever just read for fun, for escape, humor, or detective, or crime fiction?
Yeah, I'm caught up in Stephen Carter's Jericho Falls. Carter, a lawyer at Yale University Law School, has, like a number of lawyers out there, just churning out detective stories and thrillers more and more often. So I'm having fun. The last thing I'm reading at night is Jericho Falls by Stephen Carter. Yeah, and I also speaking of someone else that we've lost, Kurt Vonnegut, it's been fun picking up the posthumous short stories of Vonnegut that his son has been helping to edit. But I guess you'd still say that's sort of a black kind of sense of humor, isn't it? yeah, the lighter reading, I guess I don't gravitate towards, but Vonnegut is great fun. His last two collections have been very helpful and entertaining. And then the poets, I think that I follow Mary Oliver and Louise Gluck pretty regularly, and I'm enjoying Stephen Dunn's new poetry, book of poetry, What Goes On. And it is the place maybe where I do see more good humor and positive reflection creeping into the bookshelf.
Now, we've talked only about books really so far. Do you also read short stories in periodicals and magazines and journals or poetry, any of those places, in addition to in collections? Or do you tend to wait until they get chosen by an editor to actually be pulled together in a book?
Well, my mother-in-law picked up on my interest in the New Yorker magazine when we were fairly newly married 40 years ago, and I think she's kept my subscription paid up through another 10 years, so I do see the New Yorker weekly. Another magazine that I really like is Orion, and Orion is one of the journals that presents art and photography in wonderful ways, as well as fiction and nonfiction. Comes out of Massachusetts. It does have an environmental focus to it.
And that's spelled O-R-I-O-N?
That's correct, yes. Uh-huh. Orion Magazine.
That's new to me.
Yeah, it's a great magazine, and it's probably about 10 years old now. And then other things, I tend to gravitate again towards the digests, like Utney Reader. And as often as not, I'm probably looking through those to see what the good books are to look for on the bookstore shelves.
Well, let's get a little bit controversial here, just for the fun of it, since it's just you and me talking. What do you do when you have a favorite writer, let's say Richard Powers, and you have a favorite magazine, The New Yorker, and The New Yorker reviewer trashed Richard Powers' last novel? What do you do?
I disagree. I don't know that it was his best novel, but I think he's exploring an important area in terms of our feel-good society and the potential use of medication and drugs to sort of keep us in certain zones. I found the female heroine of the book attractive and intriguing, sort of iconoclastic and fun. I thought the male character, I could see the critique. I mean, the male character wasn't really fully developed and not as sympathetic, but that was part of the story.
Sure.
But I don't get too upset with negative reviews of books. I still maintain a loyalty to a lot of writers, even when not every piece.
Right. We're talking with Mark Johnson, who is the executive director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation for the USA, about books worth reading. There's still time for listeners in our last 10 minutes to call in. Keep your comments short, but if you want to recommend a book, eager to hear that, 333-9455. Or long distance, use our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. Since this show deals with values and ethics as well as spirituality and religion, Mark, do you have some specifically religious books? You mentioned early on the Rita Nakashima Brock book, Saving Paradise, but have there been other specifically religious books that have captured your interest recently?
Well, I think that probably I am a little more interested in the way religion informs some social and political thinking. I I'm finding myself drawn back because of, again, the relationship to FOR, to some of the powerful voices of this century, of this last century, Martin Luther King Jr., Bayard Rustin, Howard Thurman, people who made important contributions to the thinking of FOR and always made it from a self-consciously religious or theological perspective. I do like to read. I'm reading more and more in non-Western, non-Abrahamic religious traditions, interested in engaged Buddhism and Thich Nhat Hanh, some of the ways in which children, Pema Chodron and others introduce us to religious themes. Also watching sort of some of the prophetic voices like Jim Forbes and his work in Healing of the Nations, the way in which people contextualize their activism in terms of the a theological frame.
Mark, we do have another caller that I want to get to. This is a caller listening online from your state, actually, Stony Brook, New York, on line number one. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I've heard Mark mention quite a few writers who have passed on, writers in the winter of their lives. I'm curious if he has any specific words about newer writers or younger writers.
Well, our caller, before we let Mark answer, do you have some to recommend yourself?
I can't say I do at this point.
Okay.
I'm curious for recommendations.
All right, great. Well, Mark, go ahead.
Let me think about it, and why don't you suggest a few titles, Steve? I'm sure you're reading in this area, and... I can mention a few, but do you have anything, Steve, that you would represent?
Well, I'm not at my best today. Let me just explain to listeners. Mark talked about Richard Power's book that dealt with the effect of chemicals on us and medication, and I'm currently recovering from a knee operation, and I am still taking Vicodin, so my mind is not at its best. I may think of some as the minutes progress here before the end of the show, but in terms of just that category of younger writers, I'll have to think a bit. Do you want to go ahead, Mark?
Yeah. Well, one that comes to mind is Sherman Alexie, and I had the good fortune for a number of years to be related to a program called The Writer's Voice, and to be able to host. Both known and emerging writers in workshop-type settings. I think Sherman Alexie, a Native American writing out of the Mid and Northwest, is fun. His most recent collection is called War Dances. There's been some films built around Sherman Alexie's work. I think Dave Eggers is
sure.
Someone that most people will know. From McSweeney, I'm finding his book Zaytoon, and he writes so often it's hard to keep up with him. In fact, we probably shouldn't even try. But Zaytoon, which is about a Lebanese-American carpenter, home builder, and his family as they experience Katrina, is a piece of his that I like more than some of his other work. Jonathan Sofer, interesting again to watch these young writers, Jonathan Sofer and Four, who's got a new book out on vegetarianism called Eating Animals, but I've been reading most everything that Four writes since he started. Those are some. Is it Letham?
And Mark, we do have another caller. Let me see if they want to add to this list or maybe ask another question. I want to get to them before we run out of time. This is on line two from Terre Haute, Indiana. Line two, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much. Have you ever read books on spiritualism or other channeled material? And if I may, I would suggest that the best one I've ever read in my life is To Dance with Angels.
Yeah.
It's also a website. I'll hang up and get your comment. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. The one I'm reading now, I guess it would be considered an exploration of that area, is Jeremy Rifkin's The Empathetic Civilization. Rifkin and Tony Schwartz and others, again, have done sort of digest-type work on spiritual paths that are, again, non-Abrahamic in their orientation. That might be as close as I would come to that that line of literature.
We're down to our last minute, Mark. Any last book or two you'd want to be sure people hear about?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I would hope that people are following Daniel Berrigan in his last few, The Kings and Their Gods, The Pathology of Power, and No Gods But One. Berrigan's working his way through the Old Testament again in terms of the challenges of the modern world. We could go on and on, but Berrigan wouldn't be a bad place to send people towards the end of the conversation here.
We've been talking today on Keeping the Faith with Mark Johnson, the Executive Director of Fellowship of Reconciliation for the U.S. If you want to learn more about the fellowship programs, perhaps become a member, you may go online and look for forusa.org to find information. Fellowship Magazine is another place where you can run across reviews, book reviews and other reviews written by Mark Johnson. Mark has a Ph.D. in is it sociology, Mark?
Yes, it is.
Sociology.
University.
And was for several years the executive director of the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois. Later was at a huge Y camp and conference center in New York called Silver Bay, and then worked for YUSA nationally, and now has been with Fellowship of Reconciliation for several years.
3 years today.
Ah, well, appreciate your celebrating the anniversary here on the air.
Thank you for the invitation.
My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for Keeping the Faith. Next week, our guest will be James S. Wolfe, talking to us by phone from Indianapolis about how he personally practices seven different religions. That'll be at 5 o'clock Central Time, here on WILL AM 580. Remember, coming up at the Y, University Y in Champaign-Urbana, March 2nd, Tuesday noon, Interfaith in Action. And on Friday Forum, March 5th, Doing Well and Doing Good, Economic Development in Bangladesh. And tomorrow night, a lecture at by Follinger Auditorium by Dr. Mohammed Yunus. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.